Our scripture is from Luke 15, verses 1 to 3 and 11b to 32. Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him. And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me." So the father divided his property between them. A few days later, the son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would have gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough to spare? But here I am, dying of hunger. I will get up. I will go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.'" I'll bet he practiced that. Okay. "So he sent off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him, and filled with compassion, he ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it. And let us eat and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field. And when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called to one of the slaves and asked what was going on. The slave replied, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf, because he has got him back safe and sound.' Then the eldest son became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him, but he answered his father, 'Listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command, and yet you never gave me anything like a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him.' Then the father said to him, 'Son, you were always with me, and all that mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because the brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found.'" The word of the Lord.
This is a story you probably know well. The trouble, of course, is sometimes when we know a story, we have a hard time hearing it. But on the other hand, sometimes we find when we come back to a story we've heard many times before, we hear something new. That's the power of hearing stories and teachings from the Bible over and over again. We hear different things, different times, when what's happening in the world and what's happening in our lives and the scriptures intersect. Jesus' parables especially do that in powerful ways, because like a Zen koan, parables are meant to have a twist, to change our thinking, to challenge how we understand things. So this time, this week, I heard this parable as a story about families. A certain man who had two sons. It's a story about family relationships, a father's relationship with each of his different sons and their relationship with each other. And it has all sorts of family dynamics going on. Sibling rivalry, jealousy, envy, feeling overlooked and undervalued, doubting your parents' love, leaving home, resentfully staying. This is a story as old as human history. In the Bible, these complicated dynamics of families go all the way back to the very beginning, don't they? Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, Abraham and Sarah and Hagar, Ishmael and Isaac, Jacob and Esau, Leah and Rachel, Joseph and his brothers. All these stories of our faith family in the Hebrew Scriptures are actually shockingly honest about the realities of families. The Bible pulls no punches. The stories tell us that love and commitment, jealousy and rage, nurture and betrayal are all part of the complex web of family life. There are no model families, no ideal families in any of these stories. Biblical families are like the families we actually know, the ones we are born into, the ones we grow up in, the ones we form and live with in our adult life. Families are places of deep tenderness and love, and they're also places of hurt and pain and even violence. They can be wonderful and they can be terrible. The same families, the same people are both. The relationships in which we feel the most at home sometimes and the most alone at others. The place where we are our best and our worst selves. Call it human nature, call it reality. To use theological language, call it sin. That's who we are, that's how families are. So Jesus, who was a human like us, who grew up in his own family, not a perfect family, I'm sure, a real family just like ours. Can you imagine having to grow up as one of Jesus's brothers or sisters? Now there's a source for possible jealousy, wouldn't you think? In fact, writer Anne Rice, in her novel about Jesus' childhood, Christ the Lord out of Egypt, includes issues that his brother James being deeply jealous and resentful of Jesus and his special birth, his special powers. Jesus told this parable about a family, a certain man and his sons. The younger one is the one we've labeled the prodigal, the problem. He's young, headstrong, self-absorbed. He wants what is his, and he wants it now. So he asks for his share of the inheritance. Basically, in that culture, this young man was telling his father, "I wish you were dead, but since you aren't, can you just go ahead and give me what I should get when you die?" It was an insult, a shameful act in that deeply family-oriented shame-honor culture. It was an act of disloyalty and disrespect to his father and his family. But that's what the younger son did. He demanded his inheritance, and his father gave it to him. He took his money and left, with no thought of how it was impacting his father or his brother. And he went to the far country. What a great metaphor, right? He left home, cut off emotionally, left them all behind, assuming he didn't need them or anything they had to offer. How many people in human history have gone to the far country at some point in their lives? How many of us may have gone to a far country at some time? There's so many ways to go and so many kinds of far countries. People have been leaving their families or trying to for generations. But in that far country, Jesus said he squandered it all. He blew all he had and was left to do the most disgusting thing imaginable for a young Jewish man, feeding pigs. He was hungry. He was so hungry, he was trying to eat what the pigs were eating. And no one gave him anything. And finally, the story says, he came to himself. He remembered who he was. And he realized that he had no options, nowhere to turn except to try to go home. He couldn't hope to be received as a son, but maybe he could get hired on as a servant, a slave, because they lived a lot better than he was living in that pig pen. Walking the long, hungry way home, He planned what he needed to say. "Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Just would you treat me like one of your hired servants? Just let me have food to eat, a place to sleep, somewhere to be, something to do." Hesitant, fearful, the young man came toward home. And this is where Jesus, as he always does in his parables, brought in the twist. The father had every right to have written him off, to have refused to even hear his name, to want nothing to do with him ever again. But that's not who this father was. He saw his son a long way off and ran to meet him. Years ago, I heard Grady Nutt describe it this way. His robes tucked up around his knees, his headscarf trailing behind him, he was running full tilt down the road to throw his arms around his son. What respectable father, what family patriarch would act like that? Jesus' hearers must have been shocked to imagine it. The son struggles to say his words of confession and repentance, but the father's shouting to the servants, "Bring the robe, put a ring on his finger, put shoes on his feet, kill the calf, we're going to have a party. My son, who was dead, is alive again. He was lost and he's found." So the party starts. But that's not all the story, is it? There's another twist. There's the older brother, the one who stayed home, the one who had always done what he was supposed to do. He was out in the fields, and when he came in from work and he was told what was happening, he was furious. He refused to go inside. He stood out there in the dark, fuming. I saw some Jesus movie that pictured this story, this parable, being told in the home of a tax collector, with Jesus at the table, surrounded by all the people that the community labeled as sinners, the prostitutes, the renegades, the tax collectors. And his disciples are standing to the side, trying to kind of figure out how they feel about this, while the good folks, the righteous folks, the ritually clean folks, are standing outside the door looking in, saying to the disciples, "Why is he eating with these people?" That's the context in which Jesus told this story. The good people, the righteous people, the older brothers are standing outside grumbling about the party Jesus was having with the sinners. But then Jesus adds even another twist to this story, because the father, the same father who had run to greet the son coming home, leaves the party and goes out in the dark to find his other son, begging him to come in. "Your brother, who was dead, is now alive. He was lost, but now is found." But the older brother was stuck in his resentment. He was stuck in his self-righteousness. "I've always been good. I always did what you told me to. I've worked for you like a slave, and you never even gave me a goat to have a party with my buddies. Now, when this son of yours..." Notice he didn't call him his brother. Bill does that sometime when he's mad at one of our kids. "You need to talk to your daughter. You need to talk to your son. This son of yours," the older brother said, "has wasted your money with prostitutes." It's always interesting to realize the story doesn't say that. But this older brother has been imagining what his brother's doing with that money. The story says he blew it, but it didn't say anything about prostitutes. Only the older brother brings that in. "Then he comes crawling back to you, and you kill the fatted calf and throw a party and invite the whole community to celebrate this?" I can imagine Jesus making sure his voice carries from the table all the way out to the folks outside the door. The father's words of love. "My child, you have always been with me. All that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate because this brother was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and he has been found. And Jesus left it there, hanging. What happened next? How did the older brother respond? How did those hearing Jesus respond? I don't know who you find yourself identifying with in this story as you hear it today. Depends on the day, doesn't it? Do you identify with the younger brother going off on his own, trying to do his own thing? Or the one, or when he realized that he needs to come home and can't quite figure out how? Or do you identify with the older brother, trapped in jealousy because he doubts his father's love for him? Maybe you identify with a parent, grieving, heartsick that his son's gone off to the far country, that the relationship is broken, hoping and praying he will come home. Or the parent walking into the dark outside the party, trying to convince his other son of his love for him, to bring him back in, and to help him remember his brother. I think in one way or another, we are all of these at some point in our lives. We all live in the complex web of actual families and many other families that matter to us, friends, colleagues, neighbors, church family, our larger community, even our country, our global family. How easy it is to lose sight of who our brothers and sisters are, to get divided, to get separated. In all of these relationships, we struggle with these difficult dynamics of human love and relationship. We love and care, but we also love so imperfectly. We deal with self-centeredness, with greed, with jealousy, resentment, insecurity, and self-doubt, anger, and violence. We love each other and we fail each other. We hurt each other. We mess up with those we love the most. Jesus showed us that God keeps running to meet us and welcome us home. God keeps coming into the dark to find us and tell us we're loved. God keeps reminding us who our brothers and sisters are. God longs for us to let go of any of the guilt and remorse, to be freed up, to be freed from our alienation, to receive the gifts of God, the love of God. Come, Jesus said, join the party. Be restored to yourselves. Be restored to each other. Be restored to the one who made you. Rejoice together that we're all broken and we're all still wonderfully loved. That's what Jesus keeps trying to tell us, to show us. The Spirit is in us and among us, always working to heal relationships, to forgive us, to help us forgive ourselves and to help us forgive each other. Jesus is always ready to welcome us home, to call us in from the dark, to restore us to ourselves.